news, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Yes, it is. Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. A lot warmer here this morning than it was yesterday, closer to nearly the mid-20s yesterday, 27 degrees. It's closer to 46 degrees right now. On Sean Sullivan's show, Midday Mobile, a couple of guests that we know are going to be pretty guests of interest for sure. You've got Will Ainsworth, the
Lieutenant
Governor, who came out saying, hey, I don't think you need a toll, huh? What? And so he made that comment at a group of Republicans meeting out at the Lutheran Church on Airport Boulevard. So not the biggest venue in the world, but you know that the word was going to get out, and it did. So what does he mean by it? So Sean will be able to ask him about that. 1:30 on Midday Mobile today. He's a busy guy, can't be on at 12. 12:30 was a no-go. Try to get him at 1. That wasn't happening. But at 1:30, he's going to be on.
Also, I might have just jumped the gun.
No, go ahead.
At noon, Scott Tindall on. And if you're one of these people who you hear the word crypto tossed about, and cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, Dogecoin, Ethereum, I can go on and on, all these different crypto coins, if you're unsure what that is, what it means, whether you should be investing in that. Scott Tindall will be on at noon. I don't think he's going to give any investing advice,
no,
but he is going to let people know what crypto is and how it's useful. And so if you're looking for that lesson, I know a lot of people are embarrassed to even ask what it is. It'd be a good time to tune in today at noon on Midday Mobile to find out.
So yeah, I'm not embarrassed to ask Scott because Scott's a friend of mine. And we've talked about a lot of things through the years. And when I don't understand something, Scott's a trusted friend that I can sit down with and say, I don't really understand this. Tell me about that, or why is this what it is, or whatever. I can have those discussions that otherwise would be embarrassing with Scott because he's a friend. With that being said, we've had conversations and kind of learning lessons about crypto between 9 and 13 times. We sat down and probably had an hour and a half. And had a lunch to stretch into an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And each time I walk away thinking, we got to meet again tomorrow. It just doesn't quite. I get it that there's a finite amount of it.
Right.
Correct?
That's correct.
That's the first thing that you learn is that there's only so much out there.
Which means no inflation.
No inflation. That means, what else did that mean?
Well, the main point is with Bitcoin and a lot of these other cryptocurrencies is decentralization.
Yes.
Right?
So that's a big deal.
When the internet first came out and as people gained ways to use it, there were a lot of popular standalone websites, right? And now you can look at the companies who own the majority of the websites. We know them. I mean, you got Amazon, you have Google, you have Facebook. They own such a major share of internet. And also our banks are centralized.
Right.
We've talked about that for years and years and years. So with this Web 3.0 and cryptocurrencies, it's all about decentralizing. And, if Bitcoin did become the currency or something like Bitcoin, you wouldn't have banking hours, Monday through Friday, 8 to 5 or 9 to 5 or whatever.
Well, you almost don't have those now because of the apps.
The apps. Yeah. So that's kind of a terrible way to kind of explain the overview, but Scott Tindall will do a much better job later today.
And one other thing about it, too, if you look and see the entities out there that have invested a lot in Bitcoin, you might be surprised.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot more mainstream in terms of the institutions that are involving themselves in Bitcoin, like major Ivy League institutions.
Yeah, hedge funds.
Hedge funds. It's out there. Scott will talk all about it. I won't understand a damn thing he says, and that'll happen at noon today on Midday Mobile.
Maybe we invest in a new startup coin called the Bridge Coin. And it's a cryptocurrency we can invest
to get you from Baldwin County to Mobile?
Somehow make use that funding to build the bridge. I think this was a big statement from the lieutenant governor on Monday when he spoke at that GOP meeting.
I think it was a bit of a stink bomb, because everybody seemed to be happy with the plan. The member of the polls came out about Mobians and Baldwin County. About
possibly slanted polls.
Possibly.
Yeah.
But the people were pleased with this plan that they came up with at $2.50. Is that for everyone? That's for locals too, right?
$2.50, yeah. Max. That's the maximum they asked for.
Right, yeah. Right. So anyway, when the smoke cleared, it seemed that there had been a high level of satisfaction with that plan, finally.
Yeah.
When you think about all the wrangling about the Bay Bridge. And then here comes the lieutenant governor coming down and saying, you know what, the way I see it, the state's got plenty of money. I don't think you need to pay a toll. It was not a throwaway comment for sure, because what's a bigger political football down here than the Bayway,
yeah,
the Bay Bridge?
There aren't many.
No, I don't think so.
That is the big deal here. And, you know, it looked like for a time, and maybe I've misread the entire situation, but especially right after the pandemic, the Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth, he would say, or this would work the opposite way, he would say the sky is blue, and Governor Kay Ivey would say, actually, the sky is, you know, pink. And that's how things were for a while there. Governor Kay Ivey would say one thing about mask mandates. Remember, Ainsworth said, I think folks should be wearing masks out and about. Now, he didn't call for a mandate. He said that folks should be wearing masks. And then Governor Kay Ivey, a little bit later, did put a mask mandate of sorts in. And Ainsworth said, well, I don't think there should be mask mandates. So it seemed like they were saying the exact opposite of each other for a time there, and I read that as their relationship being a bit frosty.
I would agree.
As governor and lieutenant governor. And then you mentioned, which I'd forgotten, hurricane cleanup down here. Was it Sally that they came down to see, you know, the damage that was caused by the hurricane? And they came down separately, the governor and the lieutenant governor.
Yeah, when they came down, and they came down separately for sure. And then when they came down and they viewed the hurricane damage, they did it in separate helicopters or planes at the same time.
Yes.
Like there was a chance that they could have collided up there as they viewed the damage. But it was Elliott.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. State Senator Chris Elliott.
Chris Elliott and Ainsworth were in one.
Yeah, I can't remember who rode with who, but I do, like you said.
They were paired together for sure.
So I read all of that as Ainsworth possibly running for governor this term.
And well, Elliott's, of course, he's had his battles with the governor's office.
Yeah. Yes, he has, which shows kind of that split there.
Yeah.
But then Ainsworth last year decides he's not going to run for governor. Ivy's reelection campaign is on. So the big question is now, if we are, you know, part of these negotiations for the bridge, and our latest proposal, people are mostly happy with, but yeah, it still involves tolling,
yes,
on at least the new bridge.
Yeah.
Well, if you have someone who could very well become the next governor, you know, if you if you've heard Jeff Poor talk, or I was reading Steve Flowers' book, the lieutenant governor for years in Alabama was like the stepping stone to becoming the governor.
Yeah, he was the assistant. He was like the defensive coordinator waiting to get the job.
And I think Ainsworth and what he had to say immediately after the pandemic was very popular with a lot of folks in Alabama. I think he might have done pretty well in the gubernatorial race. So if you know that he could possibly become the governor in 4 years or maybe longer, do you hold out on this latest bridge proposal? If he says that the state can pay for it, and that there's been that it was a good year for funding in the state, and you have this money in the education trust fund, he mentioned the general fund, which is where some of that money would come from, why go through with this proposal now if you know that the second in charge of the state says there's no need for tolls, we can pay for this?
So what if he became governor? What sort of powers would he have to implement the no-toll plan?
Well, I would imagine a lot of powers. With the levers that the governor holds, I think that he would have a lot of power to direct where money goes and to what infrastructure projects it would go towards. And it also raises the question, you know, if the lieutenant governor is saying this, why isn't Ivy coming out and saying that the state has the money to pay for it? Why are they on two separate pages there?
There are reasons for all of that, and what role does the obvious elephant in the room is LDOT. You know, they had that outrageous plan a few years ago that everybody said, whoa.
Yeah.
It's 8:16. Dan and Dalton, your phone calls are welcome at 251-343-0106 on Mobile Mornings. Morning from Dan, Brennan, Dalton, Orwick, FM Talk 106.5. It's 8:21. It is not freezing cold. Hooray. Yesterday it was like 28 degrees at this time. A lot warmer today. We're at 46 degrees. I don't know that's what it is at the airport. Like Carlin used to say, who lives at the airport? So, you know, anyway, we're all right this morning. Little morning clouds. Just give you a little, I guess it's worth bringing up here. Had a almost a wellness visit last night with a friend of mine who caught the Omicron variant, was pretty much doing okay until yesterday.
Oof.
And suddenly he took a tough turn. I guess he's he just needed rest, I guess. But it goes to show you, you know, this guy is vaccinated too. So I was twice vaccinated plus the booster and got the Omicron. So a lot of people are getting it. And on the text line, let us know if you know anybody who's, you know, dealing with a serious side of the illness and what your experiences have been with this. But we're pretty much dismissing it as, it's okay. If everybody gets it, then we can get out of this thing. And I
right.
think there's some truth to that.
That's what I've been saying.
You have been saying that. Well, tell my friend. more than a million people in the U.S. were diagnosed with COVID-19 on Monday. A million people, according to data from the Johns Hopkins Coronavirus Resource Center. 1,082,549 cases were tallied, a record high since the start of the pandemic. So this, since the start of the whole thing, that's more cases in a day than we've had. We have now a confirmed 827,748 deaths. Bloomberg News is citing data from the Johns Hopkins University as well as its own, reported Tuesday that the number of daily cases is almost double the previous record set last week. So not only is it a record, it's like double the previous record, which was also set during this Omicron visit of the virus to many of us. So obviously it is, you see the lines at the testing centers or where people are either getting tested or being treated or whatever, you know, the, it's all related to this Omicron. You know, even though most people are recovering from this, I get it. It's, and it's kind of like the flu at this point, right?
Right. Yep.
So, you know, you don't want to get too worked up about it. But the fact is that some people who are compromised, have been vaccinated and all, they may still have a really tough time with it. So just, you know, especially if you have got some of those conditions that would make you sicker if you got this, just be careful out there. I wish you well. I was okay for the most part. You know, I was almost like texting with you on Saturday. I got tested. That was Christmas Day. I texted with you and was like, this is nothing. I'll see you on Monday. I'll be at work. And then we decided not to do that. I felt pretty good all last week when I did not come to work. That was by request of a very strong-armed management team. And so I didn't come to work. And then when I did come to work a couple of days ago.
Yeah, Monday.
I didn't feel good. I was kind of. Did I tell you that?
I can't recall. Okay. I don't listen to you.
Yeah, you're not very sympathetic in the age of COVID. You need to perk up, man. Be there for your brother.
A little empathy wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, it wouldn't hurt. But anyway, that was the one day that I was feeling a little bit tight or sore or whatever it was. But you know, the fuller case of whatever I was going to have kind of happened on the day I came back to work. So just be careful.
Well, yeah. And you're right, like our friend there, who I'll admit you're much closer friends with, but there are people who are still affected, even though this Omicron isn't as bad as Delta, or as Sean likes to call it, the original recipe, coronavirus.
Yeah.
There are still people that are affected by it, but we're seeing stories like this. Tony texted us from Fairhope. He said, my two oldest tested positive Wednesday. Me, my wife, and 10-year-old were negative, all in the same house. Tony said for them it was very mild. And you're seeing that in a lot of places. Like I mentioned that my sister-in-law tested positive when she came down for Christmas.
Yeah.
And she's triple vaxxed, you know, or however many you're supposed to have at this point. Her parents, my in-laws, also vaccinated. I don't think they ever caught it, even though they're, you know, they're older. Mm-hmm. They're in worse shape than she is. And then you have my family who, other than the one shot that I've received, unvaxxed for the most part.
Okay.
And none of us got sick. And it's going around so quickly that I don't think there's much hope in hiding from it. If there are people that are still out there trying to hide from it.
You know what? I think you're right about that. I really do. I say be careful, but what can you do? This thing just seems to be like kudzu. It's the kudzu version of coronavirus.
And the people that are going out to get tested, I mean, it takes – if you're truly sick, it's – it's got to be incredibly difficult to sit somewhere for 4 hours. I remember waiting when I had the virus last year, and I didn't feel great. It was closer to the flu for me,
right,
which didn't feel fine. But when I'd go up and see that it was a four-hour wait, I'm like, heck no, I'm going back home. I'll come back at another time. So I think a lot of the people that are testing positive don't even necessarily feel ill. I think that maybe they just have an idea they may have it, or if they're going on a trip or something, they're going to get tested, which means that a lot of these businesses who don't have employees coming in, those employees aren't necessarily sick.
They just
have tested positive.
Right.
And there are a lot of these tests, maybe not necessarily the tests at the urgent care centers and hospitals, but there are a lot of false positives out there as well. So businesses are still struggling mightily with this entire thing, and it's not necessarily because of lockdowns anymore,
no,
but because of just positive cases.
Right.
And we've already been over how this is a much less deadly version, although some people are still getting really sick by it. But then you had Biden again yesterday speaking, and he continues to call this a pandemic of the unvaccinated.
Yeah, that's incorrect.
When so many vaccinated are the ones that are turning up these positive tests.
Yeah, including my friend who I went to see last night. So I got a call from his sister, and she was just worried about him. She lives out of town, and she was just worried about him because of a conversation she had with him. And he was trying to rest, and he wasn't answering his cell phone. So then I was compelled to try and call him, and he wasn't answering his cell phone. It's like 6 o'clock at night, you know, it'd be an unusual time to call it quits. But anyway, I did the old go out there and knock on the door until he came.
Yeah.
And I was like, if he doesn't come to the door,
are you going to break in?
A friend of mine said, call 911 and just leave. But when he finally answered the door, it was like he was exhausted. He was tired. It was like, we didn't want to. It's like, Lee, you don't want to go to an ER, do you? And it was like, no. But take him to an ER at that point would have been probably way worse, because you'd have that experience. He just wanted to lay down and maybe feel better today. But can you imagine taking somebody at 6-7 o'clock at night
to
an emergency room with this going on?
Yeah.
It would be like an Omicron farm.
Yeah, I've done it too many times over the last 3 or 4 years, not because of COVID, just other situations
you have lived in emergency rooms. That's been unreal for you.
And it's not, it's not fun. And then you have these new old rules coming back to Baldwin County, at least, where visitation, they're back down to only one visitor per hospital resident, I guess, per day, which is what we were seeing last year. And I know that's tough on a lot of families.
Yeah.
And while you were gone, I had this story about elder abuse just skyrocketing since the beginning of the pandemic.
Really?
And a lot of that can be traced back to isolation and the elderly who live in assisted facilities or other situations like that are most likely to be abused in isolation. Well, obviously we had that huge lockdown last year, and on top of even having someone who's actually abusive taking care of the elderly, just only having one visitor. I mean, it's better than no visitors, I'll give you that. But anyone, just imagine this being your final days.
Yeah.
And because of what's now being described as basically the flu, Omicron variant, you're only allowed one visitor a day. That's really tough.
How about little kids, too? I'm watching those six-year-olds play at the CYO Hall yesterday, and I'm thinking to myself, what do they know about an age where they didn't have to wear a mask? Or this has been a couple of years of their lives, and when you've only been here six, and even your kids, right?
It's a big portion of their lives.
Big portion of their lives. They've been, we as a society and planet have been dealing with this virus. Pretty crazy. 8:30. More from you, if you like it, 251-343-0106. And a law in Florida, or a proposed law, I believe. Dalton's got that on the way.
8:35, FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings on a Wednesday. Right now, time to head to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louis Arata. Hey, Louis. Let's see here. Try Louis again. You there,
Hello.
Louis? There
Hi.
He is. There he is.
Hello.
Hey, Louis. So tell us, what's happening at McConnell today?
Oh, looks like it's going to be a nice little day here. Hopefully it'll warm up. We got some stuff here on the internet. Y'all check that out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. We got plenty of cars. Gene bought a a 20 Denali three-quarter ton yesterday with low miles on it, miles in the 20s. Mm. And diesel, just what everybody's been looking for. We've got Gene, like I said, he's been buying cars. And if y'all want to sell your car to us, give Gene a call, 251-476-4141. We'll give you the best price in Mobile, I promise you. So, and we need the cars. Mm-hmm. If y'all been by here lately and see the lot, it's a little bare, but we got a lot of new stuff coming in. Like I said, y'all can check those out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. All the new stuff should be there, used. We're getting pictures made right now and get them in. We bought a few cars yesterday from Orlando. They should be here in a couple of days. Got a couple of Buicks in, and we'll have those certified and out front. And remember that certified gives you an extra 12-12 on the warranty and bumps that powertrain up to 100,000, which everybody loves.
That's some good stuff there, Louie. We appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
That's Louie Arata. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dauphin Street, just east of I-65, and online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
All righty, it's 837 at FM Talk 106.5. This, is this a proposed bill, a pre-bill in Florida? What exactly is it? And
yes.
My question is it more to monitor the teachers or the students? Because I thought you had a kind of a funny take on what behavior would be like in the classroom if this were to come to be.
Right. So yesterday was a pretty big day in political news, and we'll get into some of the state issues here in just a little bit. Of course, we have the legislative session opening in Montgomery next Tuesday and plenty of pre-filed bills to discuss regarding our own state. But there's a bill filed in the Florida legislature, and I thought this was so interesting it was worth bringing up. This bill, if passed, would allow video and audio recordings in school classrooms. Also, teachers would wear microphones, and parents would be allowed to review video of any incidents that may come up. They said the proposed bill would allow school districts to install video cameras in classrooms for the purposes of recording an incident, which it defines as abuse or neglect of a student by an employee or other student. Parents of a child involved in an incident must be allowed to review that video within a week, with the stipulation that the identity of other students who aren't involved must be blurred out. There's a lot of work for some of these schools.
Yeah, a lot of work. A lot of video work.
Teachers in schools that adopt cameras would be required to wear microphones, which, you know, I had some teachers who were so technologically incapable. I don't know how they would even put a microphone on. They said cameras must be placed at the front of the classroom, capable of monitoring video and audio from all areas except a restroom or other changing areas. Parents, students, and employees would have to be notified before cameras would be installed, and then it would fall on the principals of those schools who would be in charge of all the recordings. They say it must be kept for 3 months or until the conclusion of any investigation or administrative or legal proceedings. So my first thought when I saw this was that it would probably be about critical race theory and what may or may not be
taught
in some of these schools.
Or does it have more to do with behavior of the children or the teacher?
Right. Maybe it's because of students acting out and fights happening, or they noted abuse. So maybe abuse from teachers. Not exactly sure. I mean, maybe they're doing this to try to cover all of those bases. But I was thinking, if there were cameras in my high school or junior high classrooms, I certainly wasn't the worst behaved kid in class. But if there's a chance that your parents may review video from the classroom you're in, don't you think that would result in a lot better acting children?
Probably better grades.
Better grades.
You know, you'd just be, even if it wasn't your tendency to pay attention in science class, knowing that you're being, it's almost like a C-SPAN, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like just this static picture pretty much, you know, but there's some movement going on. But being streamed live?
No, they said you cannot stream it live.
Okay.
So they would just have all of these recordings held.
Uh-huh.
And then if something happens.
A security cam.
Yeah, if little Johnny comes home and says little Billy punched him in the face.
Yeah.
Your first move would be to go to the school and say, hey, I need to see what happened on Tuesday. My kid says that he was punched in the face by the school bully. And then these Florida schools would have to pull up that video. And if they're, you know, then that would be used in, I guess, whatever the investigation would be that follows. So I thought this may have been about what the teachers are teaching in school, but maybe that's not entirely what this pre-filed bill is about.
I wonder what's the real essence of it. Who, you know, pre-filed it, and do they have any comment on what their motivation is?
So, yeah, it's a state congressman, so a representative out of Naples, Florida, Bob Rommel, who sponsored it. And I don't know if this has any chance of making it through, but it's been such a weird year with this whole critical race theory and also kids in and out of classrooms due to COVID or not having COVID, that this seems like another push for parents to get more involved in what's actually happening at the school. Which, at what line, so I can understand not wanting the school to teach something like some of these basic tenets of critical race theory that had been going around, you know, and I understand parents not wanting that to be taught and having issues at some of these school board meetings, but when does that cross over into helicopter parenting or giving parents, you know, a little too much access? Are videos inside of classrooms, is that considered too much access for parents? Will it be like going out and, you know, there are some parents who are a little too involved in their
sports
for their kids, and if they're not an actual coach, they're yelling down from the stands or whatever. We've seen that time and time again.
Sure.
Would that start happening in these schools as well?
Crazy.
These videos.
First of all, Naples, on the west coast of Florida, down below Tampa, might be another 100 miles down. It's very affluent, but it's also like there's more grandparents in Naples, living in Naples, than parents, I would think. I'd be interested to see what their school system looks like, what their city schools are like or whatever. I mean, certainly there are people that live in Naples and they're not all, but that's one of those parts of Florida where a lot, like if you go out to dinner, everybody is 75 to 80 years old.
Yeah.
I'm serious. It's like, where are the regular young people?
Yeah.
So, you know, that, it's just interesting. It's from that part of the state and that city where I know a bunch of well-to-do retirees.
Dan says, I would never want my kid recorded. There's way too much access involved there. And I don't know. I just thought that was really interesting, a pre-filed bill out of Florida. BA says, I bet half of the people that were stuck on the Bayway this morning and are stuck. I think there's still a five-mile backup, six-mile backup. He said, I bet half of the people that were stuck would have paid a $5 toll to not be there this morning. As we were talking about the bridge discussion earlier and the lieutenant governor coming through and saying he doesn't think there's a need for tolls, that the state could handle paying for the bridge. But yesterday was a big day in politics, and I think maybe because it was the last day of qualifying for Republicans in the primaries that are coming up.
Yep.
But you had one Senate candidate step down, Jessica Taylor, ended her campaign and endorsed Mike Durant for that Senate race. So that leaves us with three, all of whom have at least pretty good name recognition at this point. You have Congressman Mo Brooks, Katie Britt, and also now Mike Durant is the third and final candidate there. Jeff Poor will have Jessica Taylor on in his show today. I think coming up at, let's see here, 11 o'clock, Jessica Taylor will be on, and I'm sure we'll discuss why she decided to endorse Durant.
Jessica Taylor, if I'm right about this, but I'm asking, I think, did she not, she committed to run before Katie Britt?
I think she came after.
Really? Okay.
Well, there was a everyone had a pretty good idea that Katie Britt would run for Senate,
but I think Green actually became a candidate prior to Katie Britt.
Jessica Taylor did. Okay.
Jessica Taylor. I mean. Yeah.
Well, she certainly didn't have the budget to keep up, and her name was just, you know, polling. She was polling much fewer numbers than the other three big candidates.
She talks a good fight, and she's you know, very conservative, very attractive. She's run in the past. In her area of the state of Alabama, so we'll get to the bottom of that. But she's got aspirations, right?
And the two front runners, of course, Mo Brooks and Katie Britt. I would guess that Taylor would have taken some votes away from Katie Britt if she were to stay in the race. Well, now with just three, unless you believe that Mike Durant has a real chance of making the runoff, then right now you have Durant, who I think would pull a lot of votes away from Mo Brooks. They're from the same area up there in Huntsville, and I've seen a lot of people on our text line say that they like what Durant has had to say in these ads and what they've seen him say. So I think, you know, Taylor dropping out actually ends up helping Katie Britt in a way. I would need Jeff Poor to confirm that and get his astute political take on the situation, but that's where we are now with the Senate race. And then, surprise, surprise, Governor Kay Ivey yesterday officially qualified for re-election, so her campaign is officially on now as she looks for another term. And another name jumped into the gubernatorial race.
Say it.
Lou Burdette jumped in.
Won 200 games with the Braves and the Cardinals, and here he is.
Here he is. He's from Vestavia Hills, 62 years old.
Okay, different guy.
President of King's Home, they say a Christian nonprofit organization that helps women and children who are victims of abuse and neglect. So yesterday he announced he's jumping into the race, and I think that gives us right around 5, maybe 6 candidates for governor. But will anyone put up a good fight against Governor Kay Ivey in this Republican primary? I guess we'll see.
Seems like the guy that made noise on Airport Boulevard on Monday about no tolls. He's not running, but he's an interesting character in
all
this, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
And we'll talk with Jeff Poore on the way. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings, name of our show. Before we talk to Jeff Poore, let's go to Glow, who's in Chunchula. Hey, Glow.
Good morning. Make America great again.
Yeah, Glow.
Good morning,
hey,
Glow.
What's happening?
Yeah, I wanted to comment about the cameras and microphones in the classroom.
What do you think about that?
I just retired on the 17th of this month. Okay. I mean, December.
Congrats.
I think it is a terrible idea. I can't believe somebody's sitting up there thinking about doing something like that.
So you were a teacher?
I was a para.
Okay.
Yes, in that with the teachers.
Okay.
So that would have caused issues, you think, cameras in the classroom?
I think it's a bad idea because it's, the teacher would be under too much scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a lot of discipline problems, picking and different things like that. And then all the paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
Then all the lawyer cases.
I think
it's going to force a lot of teachers to come out and retire or find another profession.
That's a good point. Thank you, Glow, very much. She makes some good points. It's almost like the way the healthcare people are just whittled down to their last bit of energy.
Yeah.
And some of them just getting out of the business altogether or whatever, you know, or getting away for a while. But if you were a teacher and you're on camera.
Yeah.
All the time.
Now, there are some teachers who would love the thought of being on camera all the time.
I don't know. Not, as Glow said, what comes with it, mm-hmm. It's not like they're on America's Favorite Teacher on Fox.
Right.
They're going to be scrutinized in quite a way. So.
Yeah. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if that makes it through in Florida. That's certainly one of the more interesting bills I've seen pre-filed.
Yeah, but, Naples, where the median age is at 64.
But we have our own problems here in the state of Alabama. And
one of them is Jeff Poore.
Well, I wasn't going to say that. I was going to say he speaks on these problems better than anyone, and his show follows ours. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, congratulations on your super, super sexy lineup today. But I know Dalton wanted to talk a little about our lieutenant governor.
Yeah, so Ainsworth, the lieutenant governor, Will Ainsworth, was in town this week and said he thinks the state has enough money to pay for this Bayway Bridge project without the use of tolls. Kind of a big statement to drop from the lieutenant governor this week.
Yeah, it's kind of bold. I don't know that to be the case. The state is borrowing a lot of money. They just borrowed a bunch of money to build prisons. There are other highway projects around the state. How about this, you know, the Highway 43 project, not going to be cheap to four-lane it from Thomasville to Tuscaloosa. There's a lot of things the state's doing right now. And I, you know, we had Steve Klaus on yesterday. He's chairman of the general fund. At what point do we abandon that and aren't as fiscally conservative? And then I would think adding on an I-10 bridge would probably get us pretty close to that. But I mean, who knows? The other part of that is Dalton is, you know, the Alabama's been blessed with a decent economy. Does that last forever as well?
Mm. So what Dalton and I are wondering, what was his motivation to make a statement like that he knew was going to get everybody worked up a little bit?
I don't know what his motivation was. It may just be a matter of fact, right, that we are in a good enough place to do it. But at what expense, other expense of, you know, are there other projects this governor has her eye on around the state? That they have other plans, would something get put on the back burner if this were moved up? So he may be speaking truthfully, but it's just a matter of prioritization.
Yeah, and it doesn't make much sense to me if you're, you know, from here and negotiating on behalf of the folks who want the bridge built. If you have the lieutenant governor saying, well, there's no need for tolls, we can afford this thing, you would think that it would at least cause these metropolitan planning organizations to take a step back or ask the governor directly, hey, your lieutenant governor said there's this money. What's the real deal here? I just wonder. I've been saying it's maybe a wrench in these planning organizations' proposal, but they've probably got to be frustrated too because they've been working to put this proposal out that their constituents wouldn't mind a $2.50 toll.
But they'd really like no toll.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know where we go from here now.
Yeah, that has to upset the apple cart, right? This plan that you thought was going to be acceptable, and then you get told by the lieutenant governor, that we could do better. And it's clear to me this plan, just talking to those involved, I mean, I think the governor's very involved in these two MPOs and what they came up with.
Yeah.
So I wonder if, that this is not one of those incidents between the governor and the lieutenant governor there, that this is just kind of upsetting things.
And then there's the Senate race. Jessica Taylor announcing yesterday that she is dropping out and endorsing Mike Durant. What does that mean for that entire race?
I don't know. I got Jessica Taylor on a little later today, but she really came out swinging against Katie Britt and Mo Brooks. It would be interesting to see if it moves the needle. But one thing I say about Mike Durant, he really has made up a lot of ground, got into race late, and even though he's not front runner status, he's lurking.
He's lurking.
And he is lurking.
We're down to three now.
And his numbers aren't bad considering how late he got in, right?
No, his numbers are good. He's in the teens, as far as I could tell. I mean, that's striking distance. It's just, what is he going to do to narrow that gap? I haven't seen it yet, but maybe that's to come.
So Jessica Taylor on at 11 this morning. Also, Francis Martel from Breitbart on at 9:30. Mary Sell from Alabama Daily News in the 10 o'clock hour. And Sean Ross with SR Communications in the 11 o'clock hour. So looking forward to another great program coming up here, Jeff.
Hey, please check it out. It ought to be another bar burner.
And Lou Burdett is in the governor's race. Lou Burdett.
I got Lou Burdett on tomorrow, actually.
Oh, okay.
Right. Good stuff. And, everyone's talking about this I-95 slowdown, shutdown in Virginia. And Senator Tim Kaine, former presidential candidate, stuck out there. How's this for an idea for politicians? Why not go get stuck? You know, if you see somebody stuck out there for 10 hours, go be part of the story, and then you'll be invited on all of the different channels to talk about it.
And shouldn't a guy named Kaine know more about the traffic?
Good point.
It is, you can take that anywhere you want. 859 FM Talk 106.5, Dan and Dalton. See you tomorrow.